heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And it seems like every day the Warriors have a game. I don't know if that's just covering all of them because it's such a long homestand, but it has certainly been an interesting run. The Warriors beat the Portland Trailblazers 125-117 tonight. Early on, it looked like it was going to be one of those comfortable wins because Damian Lillard didn't play. CJ McCollum had an absolutely spectacular first half. And originally, you know, that was the storyline I was going to use as the lens by which to view this episode, even though there are a lot of different other ways to think about this game. But when I really started thinking about it on the drive home and then looked up some of the stats inspired by what I was kind of thinking, one of the big storylines of this game is how well the Warriors played defensively in the second half. And in the first, they did a relatively poor job of preventing CJ McCollum from getting to where he wanted to go. And in the second half, they also, of course, have to mention this, they benefited from the Blazers missing shots they often make. So it wasn't a perfect stretch by any stretch of the imagination, but they did a very good job. In the entire second half, and there was no garbage time because it basically settled in late, the Blazers only scored 89.9 points per 100 possessions. That's incredibly low, far below the best teams each year, though there is a difference between a half of one game and a whole 82-game season. And then they also only scored 81.9 points per 100 possessions with CJ McCollum in the game, and McCollum was just an absolute house of fire in that first half, did an excellent job. And the Warriors succeeded in a couple of different ways. They did a much better job on the pick and roll, just preventing that easy look or a really cogent pass out to somebody who was going to be particularly dangerous, but they also forced a lot of turnovers and a lot of light ball turnovers, which when the Warriors do that, they're really close to unstoppable. In just that second half, the Warriors forced 12 turnovers, 10 of which were live ball, and they scored 16 points on those turnovers. I believe a majority of those 16 were off the 10 steals, with the 10 live ball turnovers in that way. And Coach Kerr talked a little bit after the game about the difference between the first and second half, and I wanted to use his audio here as well.
Steve, you guys were able to kind of get CJ out of his rhythm in the second half. What worked a little
bit? Just got more physical. First half I felt like he was getting anywhere he wanted before and after he got the ball. And we did a better job in the second half of running him off of his routes and just trying to be more physical with him. And we were a little quicker, a little more alert.
That's a pretty good distillation of the difference. McCollum was not, they weren't impeding him getting from place to place as much in the first half, and also, of course, affecting the shots. And that is a basic thing at some levels, but it can also be incredibly complicated depending on the system that a team is running. But one of the founding pieces of Portland's offense, without Lillard in this case, is that 1-5 pick and roll. And Portland has developed a nice little rapport with when teams trap it, but it's also true that Damian Lillard is much better at handling that than McCollum, because McCollum hasn't had the experience that Lillard has. So you can get the ball to Mason Plumlee, but the Warriors have also broadly done a very good job on Mason Plumlee over the last few years. He had a decent game. Plumlee was actually one of the better games he's played against the Warriors, though that's in a way damning with faint praise. He ended with 16-10 and 4 assists. But the Warriors were able to get McCollum out of his comfort zone and force the rest of the players on the Portland Trailblazers to beat them. And particularly without Dame Lillard, they just didn't have the horses to make it happen. Harkless was 1-for-2. Allen Crabbe was only 1-for-4 when he had a pretty nice first half. And also, Portland didn't get to the line as much. There was a strange stretch in that long third quarter where both teams were getting to the line a lot. But then in the fourth quarter, where the game was really decided, Portland only attempted 2 free throws, and that was Mason Plumlee. I believe that was a semi-dubious foul on Draymond Green. That might have been the legitimate foul on someone else. I can't remember which one was which. So the defense should be a big part of the story, even with Lillard out of the game, partially because of how shaky they were in the first half, and partially because they were legitimately really strong in the second half, and it was a team effort. They did a better job. And to continue the thread, actually, that I was going to make originally, was that Portland does a really nice job with the more traditional 1-5 pick and roll. It's actually something the Warriors do extremely little unless Draymond Green is playing center. And the problem for the Warriors there is that if you're using Steph Curry as the one defensively, he and Pachulia are both pretty shaky in that. They're better than they were at the beginning of the year, but it is not a defensive strength for either one of them. And Portland, that's their bread and butter. So early on, they were getting a lot of good looks in a couple different ways, like either having CJ take the screen and move a little bit further out, and it was a little bit too far for Curry to get over it, and Zaza wasn't super comfortable getting out there. A couple different ways, or reading that and making a pass off of it. The Warriors got better at both sending help and attacking the action differently. Both of those things are incredibly important to keep an opponent off rhythm, but also to prevent those players from getting the looks. And it's not always true against Portland. Sometimes, especially if their other guys are hitting shots, you are uncomfortable with the idea of conceding an open look to somebody else. But with Dame out, with Aminu having, you know, not the greatest game from the field, he actually had a few really nice passes. Harkless is Harkless. You can live with all of that kind of stuff, especially when they had Evan Turner in the game, which was not a ton, but with those guys, you know, Turner played a fair amount of minutes in the game. That is one kind of through line. I actually think that was the most important one of this game, especially long term, because even without Lillard, Portland is a very good offensive team when they're executing. And to turn off the spigot is something the Warriors have not done a ton of this year. They've done more of the stop a team in the first half and then let it go in the second. So an encouraging sign there. Steph Curry is probably a lot of people's headline in this game just because he scored a lot of points, had some really nice moments, including that ridiculous layup where he switched hands, and he explained that after the game that he was actually looking for a foul originally, then was looking to pass and realized as he was coming to the ground that he had to do something with it, so he threw it up and got it in. And as a player who practices an ungodly amount of various situations, I'm guessing he probably had something there. Curry ended the game with 35 points, 12 of 25 from the field, 5 of 13 from 3. And an important element of that was 6 of 8 from the line. His only two misses were on the same possession. He looks like he got a Charlie horse from someone. I think it was Mo Harkless, and was just out of rhythm. Missed both those. Still the league leader in free throw shooting percentage. I think I looked it up and he's still at like 92.9 or something like that. Ridiculous. And Curry is going to have games like that in order to keep everybody honest. And there was a stat that Tom Haberstroh talked about earlier in the week about how Curry's touch time is a lot less than other point guards. And there are a lot of different reasons, some of which I'll probably delve into at some point, for why this is a very different year for Steph Curry. But one of the more interesting insights on it, which will make a lot of sense, comes from a question that Roz Golden-Woodé asked him after the game about those super deep threes. And I want to just leave the question, the answer as is, and then I'll talk a little bit about it.
And this is a good shooting night for you. But one thing, I haven't seen as many of those really daggered, super deep, kind of almost crazy threes from you. Are those the types of shots you're saying I'm going to hold off on and do other things with the team first?
I tried one in the first quarter. But it's just you read the situation. Most of the times when we have those opportunities in transition, with the playmakers we have and the speed that we have, there's better options, you know, getting the ball to the wing and looking to get it, you know, a paint touch and swing it or whatnot. But that's always, like I said, I've said it before, it'll always be a shot that I'll take and have confidence in as we go along. You don't want to be too predictable or whatnot. You just, if it's there, take it. And if it's not, make the right play.
That makes a lot of cogent sense for a grander explanation for why Curry is taking less of those shots. I talked with Adam Matis about on the podcast about the Nuggets game, the idea that since Curry isn't getting the ball in grab-and-go situations as much, he doesn't even have to make that decision. I still believe that's part of the explanation here as well. But another part of it is that Curry's expectations of what is a good shot, what is not a good shot, have changed because his teammates have changed. And now he feels, whether it's because of the obligation of integrating Durant and David West and everybody else, to not do that in the same way, or just because they have these options, and so you just recalibrate the way that you conceive of your offense. I mean, there's this idea, which I think is well-founded, that the Warriors could end the season with the best offensive rating in the modern era. That is fundamentally different than even what they were last year when they were a great offense, when they led the league in offensive efficiency. So maybe Curry feels a little bit self-conscious about it, that they can do better in a lot of those circumstances. And generally speaking, sometimes they can. So I want to watch that. But something I didn't talk about after Monday's game and was also pertinent here, particularly because Mason Plumlee can't protect the rim to save his life, is that Curry has gotten a lot better beyond the other things that he gets acclaimed for. He's doing a lot more damage inside the arc, and that's coming more as a scorer in the last couple years than before, but he also can use that to create passing and to also get to the free throw line more. And it's not celebrated as much because it's not as flashy and because it's not, you know, it's not what makes him great, but it can help sustain him in games where the other elements aren't there. And there's an analog for Klay Thompson, who has gotten better in those capacities. Not as he hasn't improved as much as Steph has, but it helps give you a baseline. And that baseline is also part of where Kevin Durant operates. Durant had nine of 16 from the field, but only 3 of 8 from three. So he was doing a lot of his damage inside the arc. And also, Durant does a better job than anybody else on the Golden State Warriors of getting to the free throw line. And so Durant has given the team that stability that Steph and Klay never really could offensively. Like, they're incredible players, and what they do is a strength that nobody else has. But Durant has provided a bedrock of efficiency on that end, and I am going to be interested in seeing whether he can provide not the same bedrock, because Durant's one of the best scorers in the league, whether he can provide a similar stability defensively when it really comes down to the playoffs, because this year it has been a great calibrator for how the Warriors are going to be defensively. He's a great bellwether on that end, but being a bellwether is important, because if you can be on more often, then the team is probably going to look better and going to play better. Durant had that great sequence in the second quarter where he blocked 2 shots on the same possession, came down, and it was seemingly inevitable. Draymond passed him the ball, took the three, drilled the three, I think it was over Mason Plumlee, and it was another reminder that Durant has that in there as well. And it's one of the biggest reasons why, if there is an MVP on the Golden State Warriors this year, beyond Stephen Curry turning into unanimous MVP Stephen Curry for the second half of the year, it's Kevin Durant. Durant brings it more on both ends with more consistency, and he's below his two former Thunder teammates in the MVP race, at least. Probably other people still in the process of working out where I am on all of that kind of stuff. But that stability was something that it never really seemed like the Warriors needed in prior years, but it certainly has helped, especially as they're dealing with the transitions everywhere else, and that is something that the Warriors are dealing with all over the court. This was also a different game because a couple of bench players looked good. Sean Livingston had one of his best scoring nights of the season and had a pretty good defensive second half, but nobody was, other than Livingston, arguably overtly dominant. Ian Clark had just killed the Blazers the last two times they played. I think he'd only missed 1 or 2 shots. He was largely pedestrian, 5 points, but also hesitated a lot. And that is the problem, I guess you could call it, of using him as Klay Light, is that he doesn't have that Klay confidence in his shot to basically say, this is my look. If I have this shot, I need to take it. I need to make it. And very few people in this world are Klay Thompson. So that's not this death blow for his career or anything like that. But it would be very useful for the Warriors if he could do that. He actually had 1 or 2 nice possessions on McCollum, but strengthening my concept that Clark is better sometimes defending on ball than off ball. So that would traditionally be defending point guards rather than two guards. And I want to see more of that, just to see if it's more, to get more data. And one of the other examples, that one of Clark's best defensive games was in Portland against Lillard, who was playing in that game, and Lillard was playing the one. So it was interesting that he had a couple of good ones on CJ, because CJ slid over position, was on the ball more, and Clark did a good job. Draymond Green had the foul trouble in this game. I didn't have, off the top of my head, too much of an issue with the first three, but his fourth foul was very dubious, and that led to him missing a lot of time. Green only played 30 minutes in this game, and that opened a door for Kerr to just figure out what he wanted to do with those minutes, because when Green got his early fourth foul, the Warriors had some complicated decisions. He would have had some really complicated decisions if Kerr had sat him quickly in the fourth quarter, because the only other true power forward they have on roster, at least as they use this team presently, is Kevon Looney. Looney got a few minutes in this game, played fine. He's not the greatest at that kind of a role in the world. He did fill that against Minnesota in that game and a couple other times. But the other option, which I would like to see the Warriors use with some frequency, would be trying David West there, giving him a few minutes in that situation. Draymond got that early foul. Have David West in the game and then pull him, you know, try something else that's different, and then bring West in his normal rest. It's not like he's working so hard that you are worried about burning the candle on both ends. West played 13 and a half minutes in this game. They certainly could try something like that. JaVale McGee only played 2 minutes and 17 seconds. That was all in the first quarter. He was in, was unspectacular, probably is a good way of putting it. Was -6, but I don't think a lot of that was his fault. And then never came back in the game. And West played fine. Pachulia played fine. Not as well as Pachulia played against the Nuggets, which I feel is one of his best games of the year. So we'll have to see how all of that works out. Pachulia did look more assertive on the offensive end. But again, that goes into the idea of Mason Plumlee not being a much of a rim deterrent. The same kind of idea is there for Pachulia, even though he's not a small driving into the trees like Curry or Klay Thompson or somebody else. And this is also a game where the Warriors not only made but attempted some more ambitious dunks. Klay tried to throw one down on them, ended up getting a foul call. Livingston made two dunks and also had one negated by a shaky non-continuation call. I actually think they probably should have given it to him there. And that's a good sign, because usually those situations are reserved for KD on those drives down the lane, and dunks are a lot of the most efficient shots you can take. And they're also an indication that a lot of the other elements of the offense are working, because in order to get a dunk, you have to have the opponent cleared out. Granted, it is also true that Portland broadly is a bad defensive team, so you're going to get more of those opportunities against them than almost anybody else, particularly the Warriors' next opponent, the Memphis Grizzlies, who have Marc Gasol, have a lot of other talented defenders. We will see how all of that works out in a couple of days. But overall, I think that the biggest takeaway from this game is that the Warriors can bring it on the defensive end. They're not always going to, and we shouldn't expect that during the regular season, because this is a long run. They still have more than 40 games left in the year, and these 40 games don't even matter that much, especially as teams around them fall. The Spurs lost to the Hawks over the weekend. The Cavs lost to the Bulls on Wednesday. And so they don't need to stress about all this, and they wouldn't even need to stress about it even if they got the 2 seed. So I will largely wait to puff anything or freak out or anything like that until we get maybe around game 60, because then you can start to calibrate it. And probably, actually, it's not even going to be the last 10 games. I would say the best time to kind of keep an eye on how their defense in particular is looking, because the offense is a constant work in progress and those guys are going to play. I'm going to watch the defense probably from game 60 to 70 and see where it is at that point, because the last 10 can get a little complicated, especially if the Warriors end up building a little bit of a lead up. And we'll see where they are at that point. But having something closer to a fastball at moments of this game was a reminder that, yeah, the Warriors can be very good on that end, even though they were shaky in that first half against the Blazers. And McCollum was also making a lot of ridiculous shots. He's an incredible talent. It's a big part of the reason why I don't think they will, and I don't think they should trade him, at least in the near term, because if you trade him, you're going to need another offensive player, and you're not going to find another CJ McCollum very often in the draft. It's a fundamentally different case to me than Curry versus Monte, because Monte took away from Curry and McCollum does not, either on a personal level, just because Dame and CJ get along really well, but also in the basketball perspective, because they're both willing to defer. And since they can both hit jumpers, you don't have to worry about the what happens when the ball is not in their hands. So I don't concern myself with that at all. CJ was excellent in this game, and the knowledge that he can carry the load when Lillard is out is incredibly important, because that means you don't have to spend the money on a real backup point guard. The Warriors are blessed with Sean Livingston, who can shoulder a lot of that load, especially considering the playmaking for Durant and Draymond and everyone else. But most teams have to have that fallback in place. And if your fallback is another one of your starters, it can work. It's imperfect, but it can work. So we'll see where all this goes moving forward. It certainly is a possible playoff matchup, particularly as the Blazers move away from the top seven teams in the West, and they still make the most sense as the eighth seed. But we'll talk about that if we get closer to it. And it was an interesting game. I enjoyed it. It was more fun than the first time they played at Oracle. The game in Portland was pretty ridiculous. I'm not going to talk any ill about that game. It was a lot of fun. And now the Warriors have another few big games. They play Friday against the Grizzlies, then they travel to Sacramento, face the Kings on Sunday, and then Tuesday, Thursday against the Heat, which should be one of those comfortable games, even though Miami is just nasty in terms of effort, because now Justice Winslow is out for at least the foreseeable future, maybe the whole season, with, I believe, a torn labrum. And we'll see what they're going to do with all of the other guys, because that was just announced during the day today. And then Detroit, and then that sets up the big Martin Luther King Day game against the Cavs. So an immense amount of home and near home games for the Warriors, and just tallying up the wins is enough. And this, like the Nuggets game, was not a, what I've dubbed for the last little while, a just enough game. That isn't what this was. The Warriors played pretty well overall. They played well offensively in the first half. They played well on both ends of the floor in the second and third, or in the third and fourth quarters, second half, particularly the third quarter. I thought they played better in the third than the fourth. So that's a good sign, you know, that it's not anything indicative or anything huge, but still a positive thing. And when you can add up another win, 31-5 at this point in the year, when so many other teams are just getting games where they fall by the wayside, where they have a disappointing performance. Memphis, again, lost today. They lost yesterday to the Lakers, then they lost today to the Clippers without Chris Paul. So we'll see how all this happens moving forward, but certainly an impressive stretch. You can send feedback for the show to DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter at Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux. If you haven't listened to it yet, you should give a little listen to the podcast they did yesterday for Locked On Warriors, which is with Damian Jones. It was a very interesting conversation with him. I hadn't dealt with him at all. And we talk about his recovery, playing for both the Santa Cruz and Golden State Warriors, and everything like that. I think you'll really enjoy it. You can also check out, I just released a Real Jam Radio episode with Lee Jenkins of Sports Illustrated, talking about the young stars in the league, and there's a little bit of Steph Curry in there, though we do focus more on Giannis and Towns and Embiid and all those type of guys. But you can listen to that Real Jam Radio. And if you want to support this show, or basically any other show that you like, you can leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, download every episode. All of those things are very important in terms of ratings, in terms of knowing, like getting other people involved. And you can also spread the word however you see fit, personally, over social media, over other platforms of communication, whatever makes you happy. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.